When I was a little kid, loud noises like a school bell going off hurt my ears. It was like a dentist drill going down my ear, you know, hitting a nerve. It was terrible. Smoke alarms are often a problem. Big noisy stores, you know, supermarkets and things like this are often a problem. Some children are bothered by fluorescent lights because they can see the 60 cycle flicker. It's like being inside the speaker at the rock concert. Now, animals also have very, very sensitive hearing. I mean, dogs can hear way above what we can hear. And I get very concerned in some situations, such as animal shelters, with noise stress. We need to be working on how ways to reduce the noise stress. Now, some animals have a nervous, excitable temperament. Other animals have a calm temperament. You know, and there are genetic differences in how easily animals startle. Animals that tend to have a more nervous temperament are more aware of things going on around them. Like the Arab horse, very aware, very vigilant. And an animal that's more laid back is less sensitive to what's going on around it. Yelling and screaming in animals is really stressful. They have very sensitive hearing. There's been a number of research studies now that show that screaming at cattle is extremely stressful. People need to just stop doing it. Another thing you need to look at in your grazing animals, horses and cattle, the ears move independently. One ear can be looking over there, the other ear can be looking like that. Dog and cat ears, they work together with a predator animal. And horse and cattle ears, watch your ears. I call that ear radar because you can tell what the animal's concerned about. You're out riding your horse and the ears are going around like radar thing at the airport. That's not a good sign. You know, watch where the ears are pointing. Then you can tell what the animal is interested in. Fear. It's a main emotion, both autism and animals. Fear is the primal emotion. It motivates animals to get away from predators. Now, when I became a teenager, I had horrible problems with nonstop panic attacks. As I got older, through my 30s, the panic attacks got worse in my late 20s, and they're now controlled with antidepressant medication. I want to emphasize there's other people on the autism spectrum that don't need medication. There's a lot of variability. But I can understand how a prey species animal like cattle feel always vigilant, always looking for predators, always looking for predators. Nope, I can really relate to that. Now, a lot of people think, oh, I just grab an animal quickly, do the veterinary thing really quickly, there isn't going to be any stress. Recently, I was talking to a lady who worked at a zoo, and she says, well, if I just grab this otter for 30 seconds and give him his shot, that shouldn't be any stress at all, because it's only 30 seconds. And I said to her, well, what if you walked out in the street and you got mugged on the subway? It's only 30 seconds, but you're going to be really stressed. That is fear. Lots of times scientists don't like to use that little four-letter fear word. And the fear word is the biologically correct scientific word. You'll see it in all the neuroscience literature. And I went through all the animal science literature looking for different cortisol levels. And cortisol is stress hormone. It's secreted when animals get scared. And when cattle are jumping all around and they're mishandled and they're poked with electric prods, their stress hormone levels will be 3 times higher compared to animals that are handled quietly. But the thing that's really important, when you get an animal to voluntarily cooperate with handling, and we did some work at the Denver Zoo on training antelopes to voluntarily cooperate for blood tests and injections in return for a treat, you can get the stress level down to the baseline. In fact, zoos now have trained most of their animals to completely cooperate with veterinary procedures. You know, when you force it to do something, they get a lot more scared than when they do something that they voluntarily will do. Now, in the brain, fear and pain work on different brain circuits. Fear is the most primitive. And yes, animals do feel pain. Birds and mammals feel pain, and it's been documented with a type of experiment called a self-medication experiment. In this experiment, the knee joint was artificially injured, and they get two water bottles, one containing an opiate-based painkiller that's very fast-acting but bitter-tasting and nasty-tasting, one containing plain water. Then with the chickens, they used feed bowls, and when the leg is injured, they drink the painkiller, and as it heals, they switch over to the plain feed or the plain water. Well, that's absolutely the gold standard to show that, yes, animals really do feel pain. Animals often get scared when they're alone. You know, cattle's a grazing animal. You know, you got to bring one up for veterinary treatment, take another animal along with it. You know, you bring your dog into the veterinary clinic. If you're a calming influence, he's less likely to get scared if you're there with it. It's very important that an animal's first experience with something new is a good first experience. You know, when it's first introduced to new people, new place, new things, it must be good. Because a first experience with, let's say, the veterinarian's office is bad, or a horse's first experience with the horse trailer is flipping over backwards and hitting their head, they may become permanently afraid of that trailer. Now, these memories are stored as pictures, as sounds, sometimes as smells or touches, but more likely to be visual or hearing. Vision often is the dominant sense. The problem you have with these fear memories is there's no way to erase them. What you have to do is train the animal to close the file. There's no delete. You can't erase the file, it's still there. You train his brain to close the file. Now, if you have a real high-strung, nervous animal, the problem is that sometimes these files can flip back open, and that's when the horse starts bucking you off. And this can oftentimes be a problem with very nervous horses. If you bang your cattle on the head every time you handle them, they're going to remember that, and they're not going to want to go back into the chute again. You know, I just can't believe this stupid thing sometimes that people do. Now, I met a horse that was afraid of black cowboy hats. And he was afraid of black cowboy hats because during a veterinary procedure, he was very badly abused. And he was looking at a black cowboy hat. Now, these memories are very specific. White cowboy hats had no effect. Ball caps had no effect. A black hat on the ground was less scary because that's a different picture. Now, the ideal thing for me to do would be to try to eliminate black hats from this horse's life. I can't do that very easily. Another fear memory I ran into was a horse that was afraid of white, naked saddle blankets. If the saddle was on top of the saddle blanket, no problem. But you see, saddle on top of the saddle blanket is a different picture than a naked white saddle blanket. Now, I can probably just get naked white saddle blankets out of his life. You know, and the thing is, if the animal has a high-strung temperament, it's more difficult to train the brain to close the file. I mean, you can do it. There's ways to desensitize. Medication sometimes helps. Some people are doing things with a pressure on the animal's body to help calm it. And I can really relate to that because one of the things that helped me to calm my anxiety was a squeezing machine I built that was like a cattle restraining chute that put pressure all over my body, and it helped calm down the nervous system. This is very common in autism. You know, deep pressure is calming. A man on a horse and a man on the ground in the mind of the animal is viewed as two different things. You can get situations where if a horse was abused by a rider, he'll be a problem when you ride him, but he'll be fine with groundwork, like veterinary work or shoeing. See, man on the back, man on the ground, those are two totally different things. Now, sometimes these fear memories can generalize in a visually specific way. I knew this little red dog, and she became afraid of hot air balloons because one of them flew over the house one time and really scared her. And that fear spread to round red plastic balls on power lines. And then she got afraid of tanker truck rear ends going up over a hill. And I go, okay, red's afraid of round things. But there were some round things that she was not afraid of, stoplights and a round light at the pizza parlor. Well, I kind of like in my mind, I made a light table in my mind of things, round things Red was afraid of, round things Red didn't have a problem with. And I finally figured out that Red was afraid of round object background against the sky. Round against the sky was scary. Round against something else was not scary. Stoplights in Fort Collins have black metal things behind them. So that was round against black. And the pizza parlor light was round against a wall. It was not against the sky. You see, it generalized, but it generalized in a visually very specific way. Just want to give you some other ideas of how these fear memories can be specific. If a dog gets hit by a car, you'd expect him to be afraid of cars. But oftentimes he gets afraid of the place where he was hit because he was looking at the road when he got hit. He wasn't looking at the car. Another thing that can happen with horses, and this is an example of a touch memory, is if he was badly treated with a jointed bit that's jointed, He'll be afraid of that bit, but he may be fine with a straight bit that's a solid one-piece bit. Now, if you were to take those two bits and put them in your hands, they're going to feel different. It's a different feeling picture. I got to get you away from language. New experiences. New experiences are attractive if an animal can voluntarily approach them. And they're scary if the animal's cornered and you suddenly just shove it in their face. New experiences are both scary and attractive. You take a high-strung, nervous animal like the Arab horse, and you put some flags out on the pasture, the Arab's going to be the first animal to walk up and approach those flags. But if you shove the flags in that Arab horse's face and stall, it's going to panic. Why are animals attracted to new things? They're attracted to new things because, you know, if you didn't explore somewhat, you wouldn't find new things to eat. You know, I call it the paradox of novelty. It's both scary and attractive. You put a clipboard out in the middle of a pen of cattle, they're all going to come up and sniff it. You put a coat on the fence, they'll come up and sniff it. But if the wind blows that coat and makes a move, then they're going to be afraid of it. One time I was visited Africa, and I went to a game park, and there was a zebra that decided to come in and live with the horses. And the zebra seemed very calm. Well, he was calm because it was in an environment where he felt really safe and secure. One time I was driving down on the road and I saw a whole herd of Brahma bulls. And they were in amongst all these kind of decorative whirligig things. And then things that spun around and stuff like this. Well, that was their home. See, novelty's in the eyes of the beholder. What's new and new to one animal is old home to another animal. To these bulls, it was just normal home to have all this stuff spinning around. Well, I pulled over and I sat inside the rental car and I watched. But when I opened the door of the rental car, boy, they were gone instantly. That was something new. I often have people say to me, my horse is fine at home. And then we went to the show and he went completely crazy. Now think about it. There's new things at the show. New scary things, flags, bikes, and balloons. I call them the big three. Flags are scary because they move rapidly and they have high contrast of light and dark. Bikes are scary because they move rapidly and they sneak up on you. You need to get your animal used to these things at home. And the best way to introduce your horse to flags and balloons would be to decorate the pasture fence with them and let him voluntarily approach them. I do not like rough methods where you tie a horse up to a stake and throw all this stuff at him. I think that's just terrible. If you do that with a high-strung horse, he's going to stay scared, never habituate. You know, people that tend to favor those kind of nasty methods tend to work with the calmer genetics that will habituate, but that's not the way to train them. It's a lot better. Just let the animal's natural curiosity attract him towards the new thing. One of my big concerns with horses and dogs and many other animals is they're not getting properly socialized growing up. Animals have got to learn how to interact with other animals. I mean, puppies have to learn bite inhibition. Animals that are reared by themselves oftentimes will fight other animals viciously because they haven't learned, you know, the social give and take. I'm concerned that a lot of animals now don't get exposed to enough new things. Dogs have got to have time off the leash, you know, as puppies, as adolescents, to have normal social behavior. This would help prevent a lot of dog fights. It would also help prevent a lot of bites. When you're training an animal, you've got to figure out, is his behavior motivated by fear or is it motivated by aggression? People are always mixing up fear and aggression. If you punish fear, you're going to make it worse. I talk about this at length in my book, Animals in Translation. Fear and aggression, they're two totally different things. I mean, think about it yourself. When you almost had a car accident, you got really scared. You didn't feel aggressive. Let's say you're taking your dog to the vet. Should you be there? If it's fear-based, probably yes. But let's say a police department brings in their guard dog. Should the policeman be there? If the dog's been specifically trained to let the vet touch him when he has a Kong toy, yes. But if the dog hasn't been trained, he may try to protect the policeman against the vet. Now, in that situation, you'd want the police car and the policeman 5 miles down the road, not out in the lobby of some small vet clinic. The dog's going to know it's there. So you've got to look at how is the animal actually viewing this situation. Dairy bulls are responsible for half of all fatalities with livestock. One of the things that makes them so dangerous is that they're not properly socialized with their own kind. The way to make bulls a lot safer is to rear it on a nurse cow and rear it in with other cattle so it learns that it's cattle. It's not a tameness issue, it's a mistaken identity issue. You know, and the other problem you have with animals reared alone is they'll viciously attack other animals. I bought a 30-acre piece of property, and it had a very nice horse on it that lived there all his life. But he couldn't get along with other horses. He tried to kick them to death with both back feet. He'd never learned. Once you become dominant, you don't have to keep kicking. See, there's a whole element of social behavior that's learned. Now, the dog is really unique. We can become their leader. They're hypersocial, and we become part of their society. Cattle, we don't really want to be part of their society. We want bulls directing their aggression towards other bulls. The other thing is, animals aren't all that democratic. Sometimes it's best to handle the dominant animal first. They tend not to be a democracy. This is especially important with animals like boars and bulls, because if they smell a subordinate on you, they may tend to attack.